I will stand on my guard duty and stand forth upon the battlement and will watch to see what he will speak in me and what I shall reply according to my reproof. And Yehovah answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain on tablets so that he may run who reads it. What are we supposed to do during temptations? Temptations, we are told, are the means of regeneration. We can't prevent them. Not even the Lord can prevent them without going against his order. Yet, we aren't just supposed to sit back and watch them happen. By definition, temptations force choices upon us. How do we prepare for these spiritual trials? And when thrust into them, how do we make sure we don't waste the opportunity, or even worse, yield in them and profane? In the prophet Habakkuk, the Lord shows us what we can do to survive spiritual trials or temptations. The pivotal moment is captured in our text when the prophet stands forth upon the battlement and waits to hear the reproof of the Lord. The battlements, the watching, the waiting, writing on tablets, the reading, and the running, these images in the literal sense are a picture of us reaching out to the Lord for guidance and him answering our prayers in the voice of conscience. Habakkuk's willingness to be reproved mirrors the humility and innocence we need in order to discover what dangers threaten our spiritual life and what we can do to be protected and given new life. Before we can talk about surviving temptations, it might be useful to reflect on what we mean when we say the word temptation. In the writings, unlike in common speech, temptation is not primarily spoken of as an allurement. Rather, it is shown to be an attack that occasions misery because one fears for the loss of the love being attacked. Temptations come in almost limitless variety. There are as many avenues of attack as there are goods and truths from the Lord. Some indeed may involve allurement, but one who feels drawn to evil and has no other concern than not wishing to get in trouble is not undergoing spiritual temptation. By contrast, anyone with conscience can expect temptation as a routine occurrence, for it is the means of regeneration. From the moment that a young adult is first moved by the truth and lives by it, he has begun to allow the Lord to regenerate him and is therefore open to spiritual temptation. Even natural trials can have spiritual effect if something spiritual is at risk. Take, for example, a man who loses his job. He may despair because he has lost his main way of being a form of charity. He may agonize over it. The life of religion is to do good. He might think heaven is a kingdom of uses. He might think, I'm here to serve my wife and children, to serve others, and now, what am I good for? And many other things. What began as a natural temptation may push him to the brink of spiritual death as he struggles not to lash out or self-destruct. Another person who just got promoted may see that his love for the Lord is being overshadowed by the delight he takes in his own success, and he fears the loss of heavenly life as a result. Temptation comes in many forms. The grief, though, will come to us all. And so we cry out like the prophet Habakkuk, O Yehovah, how long shall I cry out, and thou wilt not hear? I cry to thee, violence, and thou wilt not save. Habakkuk's cry is a picture of our sadness when we come to ourselves and see that there is evil to confront. Perhaps it has been days or even weeks since we first noticed a sense of unease in our conscience. Perhaps we've been in denial about evil, going about our business like people in a walled city, head down, not wanting to know about the invading army that is sweeping across the land. But we must face the facts. Hell is real. We read in Habakkuk chapter 1, "For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, the bitter and the hasty nation, and he shall walk in the broad places of the land to possess habitations that are not his. He is terrifying and fearsome. From himself his judgment and his eminence shall go out, and his horses are swifter than the leopards and sharper than the evening wolves. And his horsemen shall spread out, and his horsemen shall come from far off. They shall fly as the eagle that hastens to eat. All shall come for violence. The panting desire of their faces is toward the east, and he shall gather the captivity as the sand." The Chaldeans are coming. It would seem no one can stand in their path. Looking over the spiritual landscape, we realize that hell is out to get us, and our despair intensifies when we feel the delight of evil, for we know we have no power against the delights of evil, for our old will believes that these delights are good, and evil cannot fight itself. In Habakkuk, we read of the Chaldeans gloating over the spoils of war, like fishermen emptying their nets and casting in for more. "He brings up all with the hook. He collects him in his net and gathers him in his dragnet. Therefore he is glad and rejoices. Therefore he sacrifices to his net and burns incense to his dragnet, because by them his portion is laden with oil and his food full of flesh. Shall they thus empty their net and continually kill the nations and not have pity?" Seeing how falsities scoop up all the truths we failed to live by, we may wonder, will everything that is from the Lord in me be destroyed? It may seem like the end, but all is not lost. And so Habakkuk chapter 2 begins with this declaration: "I will stand on my guard duty and stand forth upon the battlement, and will watch to see what he will speak in me, and what I shall reply according to my reproof." Consider the battlement that Habakkuk refers to. The fortified walls in ancient times served a more pressing need than our fences do today. In ancient times, people would build fortified walls to prevent a rampaging army from sweeping their city off the map. In the same way, heavenly and spiritual things in us form a walled city, an outpost of civilization in a spiritual wasteland. Marauding armies, like the Chaldeans, routinely swarm across this territory, and we must be on the alert. So Habakkuk's mission is clear: to take his guard duty on the battlements and await the warning. Habakkuk was not a soldier, but a prophet. His guard duty, like ours, was to listen for the Lord's reproof. It is revealed in the heavenly doctrine that when we read about the voice of Yahuwah as a reproof, we are reading about conscience. When we seek help from the Lord in temptation, the answer may well be a reproof. For when we are under attack from hell, it means that we are still clinging to some evil in our old will that opposes the good in our new will, that is, in our conscience. Our conscience reveals what must be done to protect us in an attack. In common language, conscience is sometimes depicted as a mere recollection of truth. But the writings make it clear that conscience spans both our new understanding and our new will. We don't just know the truth, we are affected or moved by it. Moved because it's not just an idea in our memory, it is true. And above all, the new will, is loving to do what truth teaches. When we apply what we see in the Word, truth is inscribed on our hearts. We see a picture of this in the Lord's answer to Habakkuk. And Yahuwah answered me and said, "Write the vision and make it plain on tablets, so that he may run who reads it." In the ancient world, writing was a fragile and precious thing. And if it was to last, it had to be carved on stone tablets. Think of the Ten Commandments written first by the finger of the Lord and then again by Moses. The permanence of carving something on physical tablets is a picture of the Lord's desire that the truths we learn may change us forever. We read in Arcana Celestia, "Moreover, writing and engraving on tablets signify in the Word those things which must be impressed on the memory and on the life, and which are therefore to be lasting." We yearn for truth to make an everlasting impression on us. We first need to learn and remember truths, because by ourselves we are ignorant of the truth. But remembering is not enough. As we read in Arcana Celestia, about the things that a person knows and understands, they are nothing to him in the other life. Even though he may have known all the mysteries that have ever been revealed, unless they have affected his life. And so, the aim in temptation is for truth to become a matter of life. Since in the Word, walking means to live, then surely running indicates living with determination. Make it plain on tablets, so that he may run who reads it. But temptation is a series of ups and downs. Drawing on conscience may usher in a new level of hardship, an examination of the details of our lives, so that we can turn away from specific evils and back to the Lord. It may reveal that a particular truth is not yet a matter of conscience in us, and that we have no ground for charity for that truth because we have yet to be affected or moved by that truth, and thus have not consciously lived it. We have no affection for that truth because we still take delight in the evil that throws up falsity to obscure the truth. This is the reproof we have steeled ourselves to hear. What answer will he give? What we hear in the dictate of conscience is between us and the Lord. This is because the new will, by definition, must be in some sense ours, though in truth it is the Lord's. The vision of what is next for us in a particular temptation will not come in the form of another's disapproval, nor will it be found in our worries for the loss of natural advantages. Instead, regardless of where we hear the truth, we must see it for ourselves. The Lord answers us in the truths we have gained from the literal sense of the word and have taken to heart. Conscience is also formed and filled out by all the doctrine and knowledges that confirm the word. By reading or recalling the words of Scripture in prayer, the Lord reveals to us the deeper forces at play in a particular temptation. In the rational level of our minds, he connects the dots for us. We begin to see for ourselves how our behavior matches descriptions of evil in the Word, and we convict ourselves. The only part the Lord plays in temptations is to constantly liberate us from evil. Our part is summarized in Habakkuk's resolution to stand on the battlement and heed the voice of the Lord. Whatever he shows us, we must engrave on our memory and life. But at this point in a temptation, we may have an underlying doubt. How do we know that our efforts are sincere? How do we know that the voice of reproof is the voice of God and not just our self-love warning us not to overdo the selfishness? This kind of doubt is part of the hell's campaign of attack. For evil spirits first inspire evil and then accuse us of generating it. They stir up memories of every evil we have ever thought or done since infancy, including hypocrisy and profanation. Like Ham mocking the nakedness of Noah, his father, the evil spirit's accusations might be true. How can we know? Going up on the battlement of our mind is a protection against neurotic doubts. For doing so lets us pause and engage with the reality that though our conscience appears to be in our heads, it is in reality a vessel, a kind of spiritual tissue that has slowly been formed in our spirits to receive influx from the Lord through heaven. Anytime we hear an accusation from another person or from the voices in our heads, we should interrupt the accusation and wait to see if our conscience of good and truth agrees. The good we do will only be charity if we do it from love. We can only be freed from an evil if we see for ourselves that it is in fact evil and from hell, recognize it in ourselves, and implore the Lord for the power to shun it as a sin. It would be very different if we didn't bother taking our guard duty on the battlement of conscience. Then, no matter how much we learned truth and even periodically acknowledged it, we would never escape the pull of self and the world. Adoring ourselves and the world is internal idolatry, shown vividly at the end of Habakkuk chapter 2. We read, "What value is the carved image, that he who forms it has carved it, the molten image and an instructor of falsity, that he who forms what is formed trusts in it to make vain gods which are mute? Woe to him who says to the wood, 'Awake,' to the silent stone, 'Stir up, it shall teach.' Look, it is overlaid with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in the midst of it." Love of self and the world may captivate us for a time. They will trip us up again and again, but they have no power outside of their own persuasions, their own falsities. Conscience, on the other hand, is a protection against this power. Going up on the battlements, engraving the word on our memory and life, running to change our lives according to the reproof of conscience, these are deliberate choices that we make 1,000 times across 1,000 temptations. These choices have real power, for they are the very work of the Lord in us. We read that when therefore a man has come into such a state, then in temptation, when assaulted by evil spirits, he can be defended by angels, who then have a plane into which they can operate, for they flow into what is spiritual with him, and through this into what is natural. And that plane is conscience. Love of self and the world may deceive us for a time, but only if we keep urging them to teach us. If we treat them, our love of self and the world, like gods, we are indeed lost. For who can outwit his own spiritual madness? But if we stop believing the falsities, and go listen for conscience, we will realize that our carved and molten images are mute. They have no breath in them. And then first, we can listen for the one living God, the Lord Jesus Christ. He will teach us. He will fight for us. When we watch and wait for the Lord's reproof, there up on the battlements, we can be sure that the Lord is already there, ready to secure our feeble efforts. Unlike the idols, he is a living God, and he will surely give us a sight of truth and the courage to live it, if only we watch and wait to see what he will speak within our conscience. But Yahuwah is in the temple of his holiness. Keep silent before him, all the earth. And now to the one